Dharma projita koita votra paramo nirmat saranam satam. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimva Purayar Ishwaraha. Sadhya Hridyavaruti Detra Krati Bisusrubistachanat.
Okay, anyone who wants can sing it if they like. Dharma prajita kaita vatra parama nirmat saranam satam. Vastavamatra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimva Parairishwara. Sadhya Hridya Vairutya Tetra Kruti Bhi Susru Shubhi Tachanas. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated. This Bhagavata Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. Responsibly, please repeat. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavata Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart.
The highest truth is reality, distinguished from illusion, for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva, in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. So we're reading from the purport from the fifth paragraph. Nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time, the energies are different from the substance. This conception is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates this simultaneously oneness and different philosophy of Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadi Asya Sutra. So I find the first line of this verse completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated very interesting, because generally we think of religious activities as being spiritually motivated. So how can religious activities be materially motivated? Well, that is explained here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have unlimited material desires. The nature of the living being is to desire Krishna's pleasure, and Krishna has unlimited varieties, unlimited activities, unlimited pastimes. So the devotee can desire unlimitedly to please Krishna. But when we come to the material world, these desires become perverted. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the first verse is explained that the material world is something like an upside down banyan tree. Urdhva mulam adashaka. Where you find an upside down tree, you don't generally, it's not in your everyday morning walk or wherever you go, you don't generally find an upside down tree. Maybe after a big storm or something, you know, you find an upside down tree, but it's not natural. Usually trees grow with the roots down and the branches up. But here the Bhagavad Gita is talking about a tree with the branches down and the roots up. So the only possible place that you can find such a thing is on a lake or a reservoir of water. If you go to Powai Lake on a placid day,
look in the water, you'll see the reflection of the trees on the bank. And sure enough, the trees in the water are upside down. So, our desires, when they become perverted, when we desire to enjoy independently of God, that's the key to pervertedness. Desires in and of themselves are not wrong. Some people think that desire is the source of my suffering, therefore let me kill desire. But that is not the answer. Desire is always there. The answer is to purify our desires. Purify our desires of this independent mentality, enjoying mentality. So we come to this material world because of our crooked mentality, because of our diseased mentality, because there's no room in the spiritual world for material independence. Therefore, we're given this place to try to enact these pastimes. And it is, again, the same example, like light and manifested in darkness and a shadow. If you see a shadow, there's actually no existence of a shadow in darkness. It's not possible. It's a contradiction. So in the material world, there's no possibility of our enjoying independently of Krishna. It is only an illusion. In the Chatusloki Bhagavatam, someone was talking about the other day, the very, in the second verse, it is explained that whatever appears to be reality, it may appear to be reality, but if it is independent of me, then it is illusion. It may appear real. And we do have this problem of discriminating between real and not real. We have been conditioned for many, many lifetimes, and we're in the habit of identifying the material elements, gross and subtle, as being reality. But independently of Krishna, there is no substance there. The real substance, the source of whatever variety we are perceiving, whatever beautiful things, whatever things at all, whatever forms and sounds and tastes and smells, whatever variety we experience, these things only exist because they exist in Krishna, in the spiritual world. Here they are existing to facilitate our attempt to be God. Here is explained, nothing is apart from the substance. Everything is connected to Krishna. This philosophy was not explained by Shankaracharya. In fact, in the Padma Purana, it is explained that Shankaracharya specifically had a motive. He was religiously motivated, you could say. He had a motive to spread ignorance. Although he is himself the greatest personality in the universe, but his job was to spread ignorance, and so much so that anyone who
tries to understand his philosophy, even a great scholar will become bewildered and covered by ignorance. Such a person will not be able to understand the actual position of Krishna, the personality of Krishna. Once one becomes attracted to, bewildered by, covered by Mayavad, therefore we say Mayavadi Bhasya Shunile Hoy Sarvanash. Krishna is the substance of the material existence. Everything is connected to him, and he is separate from, and this is explained later on. But this achintya bheda bheda tattva we've heard so much about, this is the end of this evolution, the end of the evolution of philosophical explanation of the absolute truth. It started, you can say, with Buddha. Buddha completely, ostensibly, outwardly, it appeared that Buddha rejected God. He rejected scripture, that's for sure. Although he had his own teachings, the teachings of Amida Buddha, and his followers follow that, but he rejected the Vedas. And Shankaracharya appeared somewhere in the 7th century A.D., that means after Christ. So you can say Christ was 2,000 years ago, 2,000 some hundred years ago. So Shankaracharya was about 1,400 years ago he appeared. There were a number of philosophers who appeared all in the same time span. They were very powerful. They were all from Andhra Pradesh. Jai Andhra Pradesh. No, not Andhra, from Tamil Nadu, sorry. They're all Tamil Nadu. Jai Tamil Nadu. I said Andhra Pradesh for Narmada Maharaj's sake. There were great scholars from Andhra also. But all of our acharyas, including Shankaracharya, they all came from Tamil Nadu. Some of them were very much in the south of Tamil Nadu, close to Kerala. So Kerala gets some credit. But they all took birth in Tamil Nadu. So Shankaracharya was the first young boy. We're not talking about old men with beards and, you know, they can hardly move and they're speaking some philosophy which they've studied all their life. Shankaracharya was 12 years old. I remember when Pejavar Swami came here. He came to Bombay one time. He was visiting and he came to Juhu Temple for darshan. So his assistant, Brahmachari assistant, was carrying his danda. So I was really surprised because his danda was only about this big, and I thought, the Madhvas just have small dandas. And then I realized that actually he had taken sannyas when he was about 10, 12 years old, and that's how tall he was when he was 10 or 12 years old. So his danda was only that big. So Shankaracharya traveled all over India, and he defeated the Shunyavad, the voidist philosophy of Lord Buddha, and established his own teaching very similar to Shunya, but was Advaita, but impersonalism, non-dualism. So sometime after that, I'm not sure of the exact sequence, but the philosophy of Shuddha Advaita, or Vashishta Dvaita was established by Vishnu Swami. Now all of these acharyas, they established their ideas in commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. The standard was, Vedanta Sutra was the standard. We've heard how Vyasadeva had compiled all the Vedas and he had compiled Vedanta Sutra as his final work. So there was need for a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, a further clarification of Vedanta Sutra. Although I'm not quite sure, Vedanta Sutra is spiritual reductionism, and then you want to expand it with further commentary, it seems a little contradictory, but anyway. Any acharya who wants to establish himself, he has to have a tika, a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So Vishnu Swami wrote, but he got in trouble because the Mayavadis attacked his presentation. He presented this purified Advaita, but it was very close to Advaitavada, and therefore they were able to twist his words. So Ramanujacharya came to his rescue and established his philosophy, which Srila Prabhupada very much, all our Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there were two main acharyas, Madhva and Ramanuja, and Ramanuja was very powerful. He was about 300 years after Shankaracharya. And then Madhva was another 300 years after Ramanuja. But they both established this idea of dualism and non-dualism existing simultaneously. But there was a little increment, a little further explanation with each teacher. Ramanuja's arguments were very powerful. To this day, so many scholars and philosophers study the teachings of Sri Ramanuja. And finally, of course, I'm not sure of Nimbarka's contribution, but after that is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who established not exactly Dvait Advait, but Bed Abed. In other words, simultaneously, inconceivably one with and different from. Although Dvait Advait almost says the same thing, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has a more clear explanation. This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to establish the energy as the absolute truth. They want to make Brahman, Brahman effulgence, Brahman energy. That's all there is Brahman. Brahman energy. They don't talk about a Parabrahman or an energetic source. They simply say that Brahman has always been existing as the truth. So this Bedabed, and in fact, Shankaracharya, as we've heard before, he criticized Vyasadeva because he could not explain this Parinama Vada, how the living entity, there is a transformation. His philosophy was that everything is just Brahman and everything else is illusion. Individuality is illusion. Krishna is an illusion. The individual person, Krishna, is an illusion. Although Krishna taught some good things in the Bhagavad Gita, but at the end Krishna merged with Brahman. So this was Shankaracharya's idea, and he couldn't support, he actually couldn't support it by referring to Vyasadeva. He criticized
Vyasadeva. So therefore, Ramanuja and Madhva heavily criticized Madhva, and they even, especially Ramanuja, his life was threatened a number of times for his attack on the teachings of Shankaracharya. People took their religion seriously. So the mental speculators, Prabhupada calls them. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. So separately, the idea of monism, or even the idea of dualism, is not the complete understanding. Dualism means two, God and the living entity. That's dualism. And of course, monism means ek, one. But there is a oneness and difference. Development of this transcendental consciousness grounded in the conception of simultaneously one and different leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. So that we've read about here in the translation, tapa trayon mulanam. One gets free from the threefold miseries of material existence, which are adi-daivik, adi-bhautik, and adi-atmik klesha. We're all suffering in the material world due to the infirmity of our own body. We've got so many problems. As you get older, you get more problems. The body's full of problems. We're troubled by other living beings. The temple commander, the temple president, they're always giving us trouble. Or the mosquitoes, they give us trouble. There's always some living being or another who's giving us trouble. I'm not comparing the temple commander to a mosquito, but other living beings. And then miseries caused by nature. The number of natural disasters in the last century has increased manifold. In the last, at least from whatever occurred from 1900 up to 1980, whatever natural disasters, earthquakes, tidal waves, hurricanes, this, that, that much and more occurred in the years between 1980 and 1990. In a period of 10 years, you got more natural disasters than you did in the first 80 years of the century. And in the last 10 years, that what took place between 80 and 90 has more than tripled. And in the last couple of years, it has even increased manifold. So natural disasters, we will see more of them. Just look at all the earthquakes. Of course, we had our little taste in Latur, but we can see much worse. I don't know how many of you were here in Latur, but not here in Latur, there in Latur. But we were here, and we had to go and do food distribution there. And it was very sad to see people suffering, totally unprepared, completely devastated, families, no food, no shelter. I mean, they were poor people to start with. But after the earthquake, they were right off the scale. They had nothing. It was very sad to see that. But we should not think it can't happen again, because it has happened in China, it happened in Taiwan, it happened in Japan, it happened in... Turkey. It happened in Turkey. All around this area,
this part of the world.
Mexico.
He brought up Mexico. He needs a geography lesson. In Mexico yesterday. What number? 7, 8?
7.2.
Yeah. See, it's happening. It's happening. America's had so many hurricanes, and we're going to see much worse. It's because people are sinful, because they break the laws of God, they think that there's no punishment. They think they have escaped. But that is great foolishness. Maybe Krishna's police force works slowly. He works according to his time, not your time. But they're expert. They always get their man. In the Bible it says that the grinding wheels, just like you go to get your wheat ground in the village, a big heavy wheel, and that wheel grinds very heavily. Now that wheel moves slowly. It's not, you know, it's a slow wheel. A lot of times you see these grinding wheels that are pulled by cows, or by, not cows, by bullocks. So the Bible says the grinding wheels of the Lord turn slowly, but they are very, very fine quality. Everyone gets his karma. You can't escape. So, misery is caused by nature. We can get free from this by understanding that Krishna has an abode. Param Brahma, you are the Supreme Brahman, and Param Dhamma, you have a place where I belong. I can go there. And there are no earthquakes there, I'm so glad to hear. There are no famine, no floods. Bengal is completely flooded out now. The water is right up to the first floor of a long building in Mayapur, 5 feet above Bhakti Siddhanta Road. No electricity, no food. Everyone's lost their food stocks in the flood. People are just, for weeks and weeks, they're trapped in different areas without food, without drinking water. They haven't got drinking water. So disease will break out. So much suffering. But,
The politicians are going and asking for the water.
And the politicians are going in their boats, spending lots of money on diesel, asking the poor villagers for their boat. And the poor villagers, the only thing they have left is their shotguns to shoot the politicians. Anyway. Yeah. The devotee is fully aware that he is one with the Absolute and at the same time in the eternal position of servant of the Absolute. In the material conception, one falsely thinks himself to be the Lord of all he surveys, and therefore he is always troubled by the threefold miseries of life. But as soon as one comes to know his real position as transcendental servant, he at once becomes free from all miseries. As long as the living entity is trying to master material nature, there is no possibility of his becoming the servant of the Supreme. Service to the Lord is rendered in pure consciousness of one's spiritual identity. By service, one is immediately freed from material encumbrances. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasya ahankara vimudatma karta hamiti manya. Only the greatest, not only an ordinary donkey, but a real big donkey, a real foolish person, thinks that I am the doer, I am the controller. There's a famous example of one Mayavadi philosopher who went to America and spoke to a gathering of people, telling everybody that they were God. Why do you go to church? You yourselves are God.
He became famous for that speech. But on the second day of the conference, he got a toothache and he had to leave. He couldn't attend the next day because of a toothache. So he wanted us to believe that God is subject to toothaches, and God can't control his situation. The real problem is that it's hard for us to be humble. The greatest Vaishnava quality, we saw this in Prabhupada, when you see it in a person, it's so beautiful. It's so attractive. Attractive, it means you really want to be with that person. And we saw Srila Prabhupada, he was so qualified, he was such an aristocratic gentleman, fully endowed with knowledge and renunciation, fully empowered by his own guru, and yet he was ready to give credit to everyone else for his work. There's a nice story. One of his disciples, his name was Roy Ram. So he was a little bit of an editor. So he was helping Prabhupada with editing the Bhagavad Gita, but he had some spiritual difficulties, means some determination problem. He wasn't so convicted. So Prabhupada encouraged him, no, you please go on, we'll finish this, we'll put your name, Bhagavad Gita as it is, by Roy Rama. He was prepared to do that. Srila Prabhupada had no interest in mundane name or fame. Srila Prabhupada did not think, I am the doer. He gave all credit to his Guru Maharaj, and of course to Lord Krishna. So this quality of humility is so sublime, and we need to see that about ourselves. Although we say in the morning that now let us offer our respectful obeisances unto all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord who are just like desire trees, etc., etc., and Jai Prabhu. But it's got to go deeper than just a few lines in the morning. During the day, we have to think of ourselves as servants of the Vaishnavas. If you want to be successful, if you want to attract Radharani, if you want to actually become perfect in devotional service and get free from the material miseries which are being discussed here, then you have to become a humble servant. This is your identity. You should enter through the servant's entrance. I love to see that in a hotel. You know, they always have the main entrance, and then they have the servant's entrance. And I usually go in the main entrance, but I think I should be going in the servant's entrance. Because that's our constitutional position. We're servants of God. We need bhakti. We need devotion. This is our work. We need to come to the temple. All of you who are congregational devotees, if you don't have service, those who are residents of the ashram, they've got some prescribed service, so they're very lucky. But if you don't have any service, if you're just visiting the temple daily, it's not enough. You must serve Radha Ras Bihari in some practical way. So you must approach the authorities and beg them for an opportunity for some regulated devotional service, because that's your position. And you won't realize it until you act like it. You're not going to realize just by a little talking. You have to act like it. Over and above this, Srimad Bhagavatam is a personal commentation on the Vedanta Sutra by Sri Vyasadeva. Here we go. See, the Vedanta Sutra, many people write their commentaries, but Here's the real commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. And if we are to... Nowadays, there's not so much. Of course, we have our Baladeva Vidyabhushana, but before Baladeva Vidyabhushana, our acharyas did not think it very significant to write a bhasya on Vedanta Sutra. We didn't have one. They didn't consider us a bona fide sampradaya, the other scholars, because we had no. So Baladeva was asked, and he agreed, and he wrote, and it's very nice. But the point is that the author himself has written his own commentary, and it is very clear. There's no need of explaining something further when it is clear. The message of Srimad Bhagavatam is very clear to those who are pure in the heart. Paramo nirmatsaranam satam, who are nirmatsa. Srimad Bhagavatam is quite clear. Although Vedanta Sutra, it does give one the idea, it's not specific. You can't immediately understand the personality of Godhead, because it's the sum total of all the Vedas in short form. So it's hard to understand just by going through Vedanta Sutra. And it's also very difficult, complicated Sanskrit. So Vedanta Sutra was summarized or was commentated upon by Vyasadeva in this Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's very easy. It's philosophy, the highest philosophy. These first few verses are full of technical philosophy. But we're going to discuss, we have been discussing, so many nice stories. So it's couched in story form, just like you're seated on the floor, it's a little uncomfortable, but I have a nice seat. Easy to sit here. I'm couched on this soft cushion. Makes me want to go to sleep. Okay. So it's easy. When you're feeling comfortable to do something, if you're always disturbed, it's not so easy. So similarly, it's easy to understand this philosophy when it's in story form, and that's was the request, the mercy of Narad Muni. It was his request to Vyasadeva, and that's what Vyasadeva has done. He has combined history, itihasa, with philosophy. Sri Vyasadeva is the authorized incarnation of Narayana, the personality of Godhead. Therefore, there is no question to his authority. He is the author of all other Vedic literatures, yet he recommends the study of Bhagavatam above all others. So because it gives us such a clear understanding, therefore, why should we go to something which is ambiguous, a little bit difficult to understand? Srimad Bhagavatam is very clear. It's relatively, although it's a postgraduate study. I mean, it's not just Bhagavad Gita. It's more serious or more technical than Bhagavad Gita. But it is comprehensible by we who are fallen in this Kali Yuga. There is a chance for us. Someone asked me that it's almost, he said, it's impossible to be happy in the material world. Well, actually, no, that wasn't his question. He said, it's impossible. The way it's described, what I have to do to become Krishna conscious, although it appears to be easy, but it's actually almost impossible. I've been practicing for many years now, and there's always a tendency to fall down. I'm surrounded by Maya, and it's almost impossible. So it's true that it's very difficult, but material happiness is also impossible. because of adidaivik, adibhautik, adiatmik klesha. You cannot be happy in the material world no matter how hard you try. We, of course, here in Juhu for the last 30 years, or 25 years, we have been cultivating the wealthiest people in India. And cultivating them means we've developed a personal relationship with them and their families. They've invited us into their homes. We've seen how they live. And you might think that because they have a Mercedes car, because they have a big bungalow, because they go here and there in the world, that they must be happy. But it's not true. It's not true. They have got more anxieties and more miseries than a simple common man. They have got the same birth, death, old age, and disease problems. They've got the same tapatrayon mulanam, the tapatraya, the same adidaivik, adibhautik, adiatmik miseries. Plus they have much, much more. They're in great anxiety. So everyone, top to bottom, upariyada, you go from Brahmalok to Patalok, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punaravart, you know, Arjuna. There's suffering and misery in the material world. It's impossible to be happy here materially. Every day, to become a servant, to become humble. I can't control my ego. I can't control my lust. We know these things in our heart. But the only hope is this avenue, spiritual path, as set forth by the author of Srimad Bhagavatam. He has given us this path. He's made it as easy as possible. In other Puranas, there are different methods set forth by which one can worship the demigods. But in the Bhagavatam, only the Supreme Lord is mentioned. The Supreme Lord is the total body, and the demigods are the different parts of that body. Consequently, by worshiping the Supreme Lord, one does not need to worship the demigods. The Supreme Lord becomes fixed in the heart of the devotee immediately. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended the Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Purana and distinguishes it from all other Puranas. Again, Srimad Bhagavatam is described here as the only book that we require to attain perfection. It does, dharma projita koitavotra. Demigod worship is rejected. Demigod worship is simply a detour to nowhere. You know, you're going somewhere to Pune, and the road is out, and there's a sign detour. So you go off the road on the detour, and you know, you end up nowhere. You can't get back to the highway. You know, you get completely frustrated. Sometimes that happens. So demigod worship is like that, as a detour to nowhere. You get stalled. Your car stalls. Your spiritual spaceship runs out of fuel. You miss the point. The point is not demigod worship. The point is, if you want Krishna's lotus feet, and you feel that you're too materially attached just now, so okay, have a good wife, worship Uma, and you know, worship Durga for some other facilities, and health, you worship Surya, and you know, live a nice life, and then go on to Krishna a little later on. Postpone. But the problem, what happens, we forget about the goal. We think, oh, this is nice here. Why should I go back to Godhead? Now that I've worshipped Uma and
You know, the goddess of fortune has become my wife, and I worship Surya, and now I'm, you know, Hanuman, and, you know, very strong. Then you forget. Tendency is only when we're in trouble we worship God. When we're enjoying, we forget Him completely. So, Srimad Bhagavatam rejects all of that. It's not relevant. It's not proper. Demigod worship is rejected. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, it is rejected. Every living entity from Brahma, the firstborn living being within the material world, down to the insignificant ant, desires to relish some sort of taste derived from sense perceptions. Okay, this gets into a section which could be... Where am I? The wind blew me away. A challenging attitude, pardon me. The proper method for receiving this transcendental message is to hear it submissively. A challenging attitude cannot help one realize this transcendental message. One particular word is used herein for proper guidance. This word is shushrushu. One must be anxious to hear this transcendental message. The desire to sincerely hear is the first qualification. Now, this is something that we have to learn in ISKCON, and it's related to Diksha and Siksha. Big subject. But I'm not going to say much. But we're not here to just hand out initiation certificates. ISKCON is not... ISKCON or the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, we are dealing with knowledge which is meant for seriously inquisitive students who want to make success in their life, and they're prepared to make changes in their life, control their senses, and take guidance from authorities. So, this whole idea, the essence is to acquire knowledge. People come and they think that if I can just stick around for a little while and get initiated, that's the goal. That's not the goal at all, and that's almost the antithesis of the goal, to get some official recognition as a disciple. What we want to see is people come forward and inquire, who am I? To establish many relationships with senior Vaishnavas and to inquire about their spiritual nature, to churn the ocean of nectar, to sit together, katayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. That's what our acharyas, the six Goswamis, did. They constantly sat together and churned the nectar of Krishna katha, Krishna's pastimes. We may say, well, we don't have time for that. You have time for everything else but the most important thing. It should be the other way around. I don't have time for my roti, kapra, or makan because I'm too busy discussing Krishna consciousness. Krishna will take care of you. Yoga kshema bahami aham. So the essence is to inquire philosophically, to hear submissively, and to ask pertinent questions and to increase your knowledge. Diksha is a formality that may take place at a certain period. But the proper guidance, susrasu, the qualification is that you must be anxious to hear. You must be thirsty. And Prabhupada said, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said about Srila Prabhupada, he noticed Srila Prabhupada was sitting in one of his classes, and Bhaktisiddhanta noticed. He was at so many people,
But Srila Prabhupada was noticed by Bhaktisiddhanta. This boy, he's very anxious for hearing. He noted that. He was pleased by that. He mentioned it to his senior disciple. This boy, he likes to hear. He doesn't go away to go on parikrama or this or that. I'm not saying those things are bad, but if someone is speaking, a good speaker is speaking on Krishna consciousness, then that's the essence, to hear. Less fortunate persons are not at all interested in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. The process is simple, but the application is difficult. Unfortunate people find enough time to hear idle social or political conversations, but when invited to attend a meeting of devotees to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they suddenly become reluctant. Sometimes professional readers of the Bhagavatam immediately plunge into the confidential topics of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, which they seemingly interpret as sex literature. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be heard from the beginning. Those who are fit to assimilate this work are mentioned in this sloka. Quote, one becomes qualified to hear Srimad Bhagavatam after many pious deeds, end quote. The intelligent person with thoughtful discretion can be assured by the great sage Vyasadeva that he can realize the Supreme Personality directly by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam without undergoing the different stages of realization set forth in the Vedas. One can be lifted immediately to the position of Paramahansa simply by agreeing to receive this message. So it is stated in the Puranas also, Aho bata swapachato gariyanya jivagre vartate namatu bhyante pusta puste jubu sashnuraya brahmanu chunama granantiyete. Even the lowest person, if they take up the process of chanting the holy names, they can reach the highest goal, or you could say they have already undergone all purificatory processes and have reached the highest goal just by chanting. Chanting is the method to achieve the highest goal, and chanting is itself the highest goal, which is available to all of us if we want it. So are there any questions? Comments? Oh, he's got one of his crooked smiles on his face here. Vamana's gonna... Okay. All glorious problem.
In Buddha time, Acharya appeared, that is the power of the great common man. Now those powers, Krishna then is accepted. How that power is working is making good to the public in the Buddha time. That is for example, as you heard recently, Buddha came and he influenced by the spirit of the Shukracharya. He made good manual, common and the learned person. How is becoming what is so beyond it is one common man and
it is what is expected. I didn't hear the question, so you go ahead. No, you answer. Bolo. Okay. Yes. Well, Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Okay. Grant. Devyam Vastava Matra Vastu Shivadam. Yes.
Sometimes said
that knowledge can be a very
dangerous thing. Yes. So
I question the importance of knowledge in relation to faith alone. Uh-huh. You question the importance of knowledge? I didn't quite hear. I'm a little deaf in one ear.
The importance of knowledge in relation to faith.
Oh, okay. The importance of knowledge in relation to faith. Well, the beginning is faith. Adau Shraddha. one has to have some faith. We heard in the purport that one does develop an interest due to many, many pious activities in the past. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahoitukam. If one can somehow or other be engaged in some kind of Krishna Bhakti, even something insignificant like cooperating with devotees or even smiling at devotees, being non-envious of devotees. There are many levels that one may start their devotional service, but the result of devotional service is that one develops detachment from the material world spontaneously, and from within the heart, Lord Krishna, Tesham evanu kampar tamaham agyana jam tamaha. Krishna, with the torchlight of knowledge, he enlightens the devotee. We as preachers, we make a lot of effort to engage people in devotional service by getting them to chant or take prasadam. Philosophical discussions, people really don't have a lot of capacity. Just the very nature of what we have been instructed is so different from the world view which most people have been brought up in, at least in the Western world. But even in India or even in Asia today, you find people are educated as materialists. There's very little classical philosophy. So I think in both ways, even if you learn philosophy, in order to realize that, in order for it to come to vijnana from jnana, you need some practical service, and practical service needs some faith. You won't give your time or your energy unless you have a little faith. You won't do it blindly. You have to have some faith. Or even if you have no knowledge at all, then, of course, faith is even more important. There's faith in the middle, faith in the beginning, shraddha, nishtha, and faith all the way through. Our faith is sometimes stabilized. In other words, we don't encourage blind faith, certainly. Sakaran Shraddha, rational faith, is good. It stabilizes our knowledge, stabilizes our rational faith. So we need that too, but I think of all the things, I think faith is primary. Yes, sir.
Maharaji, my question is of a common man.
Me too.
Supposing me, I know God is there. Okay, to follow his scriptures and his duties, how will I know him? How should I select him?
Well, the Mahajano Yena Gatasa Pantaha, I think the presence of preachers in the world who actually go out of their way to try to enlighten people and share with them the path of devotional service, I think that is important. If there are no pure devotees who are going out to educate the public, I don't think the common man on his own can come to any rational conclusion. He needs help.
Maharaj, coming back to faith and knowledge.
Okay.
Doesn't faith stem from knowledge? Because if there is no knowledge, if they don't have knowledge of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, there cannot be any faith. Second, Maharaj, that...
No, I think that that they are interrelated, but I think faith is primary. One can... Okay, the essential knowledge... I mean, we can't exactly compare the example of the gopis in the sense that in their previous lifetimes they were scholars. But in this lifetime, they were not scholars at all. They were just attracted to Krishna. So there may be some intuitive attraction coming from a previous lifetime. In many devotees have experienced this, that their desire to know God is something that they can't explain, and it's coming from a previous lifetime. But they have an attraction, and that attraction leads them to faith. I don't want to go on. It's an endless cycle. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, they're related, no doubt. But I would say, in degree of importance, I'm trying to protect my faith. If I'm a little short in knowledge, okay. But I don't want to be short in faith. A kanishta and a madhyam, the difference is not in knowledge. The madhyam does not necessarily have the full requisite conclusions of the gamut of Vedic anthology. But he has faith, he has strong faith. Whereas the kanishta, his faith is not strong. Nope. No, he's here, right here. He's here, now we'll get proper answer.
Question that, what is exactly spiritual realization? He said Vyasadeva composed the Bhagavatam in his natural state. But sometimes they say that, or we can say that spiritual realization means one knows what is Shastra, what is there in Shastra. Sometimes we may say that spiritual realization means we hear the mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. But what exactly is other part? We cannot express
spiritual realization is explained by great devotees in the Shastra. You may not be able to comprehend it, but it is explained. Your point was that can't be explained, it has to be experienced. So that's also true. But at least theoretically you can accept that, especially in texts, the whole life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially in the Antya Lila, is an explanation of his spiritual experience. Now, we may not, feel what he's feeling. Oh yeah, I know what it's like to be in Mahabhava. That sounds natural, you know. Well, that's far away from our level of understanding. But it's explained there. His complete abandon. There's a verse that, what is that verse? Ishtadeva Spurti. Nadeketar Murti. Ishtadeva Spurti. Anyway, the devotee of the Lord, pure devotee of the Lord, he is aware of the material world, but he doesn't exactly see material forms. He sees Krishna everywhere. He sees Krishna everywhere. There was a good movie many years ago called Ye Hai Zindagi. And this one fellow, how many of you saw Ye Hai Zindagi? All the old fellows. Anyway, it was a movie made by one of our life members, and he used Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and it was about a man who was very poor, but he stole his wife's piggy bank. His wife was saving up money to worship Krishna, so he ridiculed her, stole her money, and bet on the horses or something and won. And from that, he bought out his employer, and then he bought many sweet shops, and then he bought hotels and this and that. But in the end, his whole life became miserable, and everywhere he was looking, he was seeing Krishna would come to him and explain something to him about his life from the Bhagavad Gita. So he began to see Krishna everywhere, almost sort of like Kansa, actually. Kansa's a little bit different, but the devotee, Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam, he also sees Krishna everywhere, Krishna guiding him, but in a favorable way. So it's not possible to understand that without experiencing it, although we can read about it and accept it, that the devotee of the Lord, you know, once someone asked Prabhupada a question, when you see Krishna everywhere, pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere, within everything. So the devotee asks, when you see Krishna everywhere, Prabhupada, is it a vision that you have? All of a sudden you get a vision? Or is it an understanding, a philosophical understanding in your mind? And Prabhupada said, no. He said, it's a fact. It's not a vision. It's not just an understanding. Krishna is everywhere, and I'm seeing that fact. I haven't made some adjustment in my mind, but I'm seeing Krishna everywhere. I think, is anything different than what we've been discussing? It's getting a little late. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam.